The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul. Welcome to the program. If I was to ask you what has been the most talked about event of the past year or two in commercial real estate, or certainly in office space, chances are really good that you're going to talk about flexible office space. Recently, CBRE did a report on flex office space here in the United States. The lead author of that report is Julie Whalen. She is head of occupier research for the Americas at CBRE, and she is my guest today to talk about the results of that report, to talk about the flex office space business, its current state, the outlook for the industry, and also the astonishing number of players there are in the space. It's a topic of great interest these days and one you no doubt want to hear more about. So I won't delay any further. Here is my conversation with Julie Whalen of CBRE. I was so glad to see this topic, I got to tell you, because there's been so much conversation about flexible office space. Talk about the current state of flexible office space. You just did a report for CBRE. What does that report say about the current state of the flex office space?
Yeah, so, you know, as much as flexible office space is dominating the headlines in the media today, it's really important to remember a couple facts about it, right? So it is only around 70 million square feet today, and that's within the 40 markets or so, which are the most primary markets that we track in the United States. Now, the reason that that has captured so many of the headlines is because it has increased by more than 600% since 2010. So it has had a growth trajectory unlike anything that really I think anybody has ever seen in their real estate career in terms of an asset class. And this year, in 2019, it is anticipated to grow by 36% alone, which is yet again another banner year. Now, it's important to realize that it's still primarily a phenomenon in the larger primary markets. So you think Manhattan, LA, Chicago, and Boston. But when you look at where the growth is really happening, you can see some of the smaller markets like Seattle and Dallas that are really experiencing a lot of growth right now. And certainly it's spreading into submarkets, into suburbs, and even into the smaller secondary markets in the U.S. So although, again, it's dominating the headlines, it is because of the growth story, not necessarily because of the sheer size of it that it is.
Well, how old is the flex space industry? It's exploded onto the scene, but how many years back does it date? Do you have that history in the report?
So it's not in the report, but I mean, flexible office space itself is decades old. You know, you can look back to the early 80s and see, when Regus came to be. But there are different generations of flexible office space that are really emerging today that are very, very different than what we've seen in the past.
Okay, so Regus, you mentioned the name. I was trying to think of who it was. Regus, a really popular name, but didn't make anywhere near the waves that we're seeing today. So why has flex space caught fire in the United States? It's been around a long time, but it's only recently really caught fire. Why is that?
Yeah, so personally, I think that there are two specific reasons why. So first, it's because the new generation, I like to call it next gen flexible office space, feels very different than the original generation of space did. So you can look at that in a couple ways. Number one, the locations are much more centralized into primary CBD markets than they have been in the past. The old generation was really dispersed into kind of hidden markets throughout the U.S. So it's much more visible in the mainstream today than it ever has been before. Secondly, just the size of these locations are a lot different on a square footage basis, and where they're placed in the building stack is much different. Now, this size is really important because it allows the end users that these flexible space operators are after to scale at a much more different rate and pace than the old generation of flexible office space allowed them to. And then lastly, the aesthetic is really different. So you think activity-based workplace design, you see comfortable furnishings, you see everything tech-enabled in these environments, and that's absolutely setting this generation apart. And it's perhaps, to me, probably one of the most important differentiators, because all organizations, regardless of if you're thinking traditional space or flex space, are grappling with how to make this transition to a more modern work environment today. And in a lot of ways, this new offering is allowing a path to that transition that's much easier than them having to do it themselves. So that's sort of what the space looks like and how it's different than what it used to be. But then also, when you look at just society in general, the way people are working has changed drastically in the last decade, never mind since the 80s. And regardless of job title or where we're located, we're all more mobile human beings. And this drive towards sort of this more mobile workforce is really changing what I like to say is the necessary role that the office used to play as a place that where work gets done. It's no longer that necessity to have that physical environment to go into for you to do your work. And so today what people are in essence doing is using a network of locations throughout their day to be most productive according to what their workday calls for and also what their personal life calls for. And so what this next generation of flexible office space is doing is it's allowing organizations to better support this mobile workforce in a much more fluid way. And I think, you know, a lot of people say, is this only a fad? Is this just a trend that's going to disappear? And I emphatically say no to that, because this trend of being more mobile as a society and certainly as a workforce is only gaining strength. And the younger generation in the workforce that's moving up into management roles is really starting to shape their company culture around these new ways of working, and it's only going to get stronger.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that. Yeah, the mobility is going to go away. It's only, if anything, only going to become more mobile. Now, you mentioned companies having, it sounds like what you're talking about is companies will have multiple sites within a city so that an employee, depending on where he or she is, where they live, or where they just happen to be that day as they go about their day and maybe have meetings around the city, they've got multiple locations that they can just pop into. Is that the case?
It may be around a city, it may be around a country, it may be around different sub-markets in an overall market, being, you know, suburbs versus CBD. It really depends on your workforce that you have in hand and how mobile they are and why they need to be mobile, whether that's because of a client base or because of a different element of where their work is, or frankly, because where they live versus where they work. And so depending on what element is driving that mobility might depend on where they need these locations to work out of. Now, if you fast forward 10 years, you know, and you really look into a crystal ball, there could be a scenario where instead of when you sign up to work for a company, they don't just hand you a badge to location X or tell you that you can work from home. Instead, they give you almost, I've heard it likened to a health plan or a class pass type system, where you are given either a number of credits or a certain plan of locations that you can move in and out of as your day requires, but you are not required to just go into one place every day. Instead, you're given a network of options to work from.
So WeWork is the big player these days. And I've never been in a WeWork space, but when you talk about some of the amenities that they offer, I've heard things such as concierge service, beer and wine. Does that ring true? And what are some of the other amenities that that differentiate them, or has really been brought to bear in a way that hasn't been in the past?
Well, any flexible office space, or really any modern workplace environment today, regardless of if the operating model is based on flexibility or not, are really moving towards this more experience-based full-service amenity-based offering. And the reason for that is because the workplace and the workforce is much more competitive than it ever has been before. And the way that you treat your employees and value your employees can be very visibly shown through the type of workplace environment that you provide them. So that is where this idea of really incorporating amenities into your workplace and experiences into your workplace has really burgeoned from. And so putting that aside, we do see this as a trend that is happening. And from a, you know, it's not necessarily just the beer and the wine. The beer and the wine, you know, hit headlines because it's very sensationalized. It's a fun thing to talk about. But I would say that that is not what we are seeing, you know, in the majority of these amenity-driven, experience-based workplaces that we're identifying. Instead, what we're seeing is services that are being put into the workplace that actually help the employee to better balance their life. To better balance their life, either from a what they need to get done from a personal perspective and making it easier to get that done within your work environment. Maybe they provide dry cleaning, maybe they provide childcare services, maybe they provide readily prepared meals that you could take home at night. Ease of work is honestly an amenity that is really important. So enabling these environments through technology and making sure that when you do go into an environment, you can very easily work in that environment and get the things done that you need to do because your audiovisual is very good and easy to use. You have Wi-Fi everywhere, and you just have tech that is really helping move you through your day. And then lastly, amenities and experiences from a wellness perspective. So wellness is really rising up the agenda right now and making sure that we have elements of the workplace, something as simple as hydration stations that are really easy to see, easy to engage with, and, you know, give you a really good experience in getting your water, which sounds silly, but it can be made to happen. And I've seen environments where it's really great, all the way to offering yoga classes or having wellness rooms in your place of work. So those are different ways that are a little bit more sophisticated that we see amenities and experiences really being emerged into the work environment that are very different than what the headlines talk about when they say just, you know, beer and wine all the time, because that's just not something that we see in necessarily all sophisticated environments.
So what companies, I mean, I can understand it, I can imagine a range of companies, almost any company could benefit from flexible office space, but are there certain companies that are better suited to this sort of environment, the flex office space?
Yeah, so there are a lot of different models of flexible office space out there. I think that sometimes people use the term co-working and they think that that means just one thing, when really flexible office space can mean a myriad of things. And depending on the model of flexible office space that you're engaging with, may be different according to the type of tenant that you are. So we really kind of split the tenant base into three main types, and that's according to size. So you may have small tenants, which are anywhere from individual members to very small teams that are maybe upwards of five people that really need that kind of on-demand space month to month and can truly work out of a what we consider to be co-working environment, which is shared amenities, shared common areas, shared desking with maybe, you know, one office that you can lock that you can go into, you know, and keep your organization's belongings in. Then you have the mid-sized tenants that are maybe larger, 25 to 100 people, that are looking for point solutions, right? And they might be looking to open a satellite office somewhere. They may need swing space because they're building out their traditional space and they need to go into, you know, and land in a flexible office space for 6 months while that's happening. They may have unforeseen growth that they have to plan for really quickly. Those are kind of mid-sized needs that are very point in time based and have a beginning and an end period, typically. And then we have our larger enterprise tenants that are really looking to make this as a piece of their overall portfolio strategy. And that portfolio strategy could be for individual members. It could be for those mid-sized tenants. But on the other hand, it may be that they have a very large requirement that has an expiration coming up, and they're not sure that they want to renew for the whole thing. And so they may renew for the piece of their pie that they know is going to be consistent and solid headcount over the foreseeable future that they're signing a lease for. But then there may be a portion of headcount that is variable, and they're not sure what's going to happen to it because it might be at risk of automation disruption, or we're not sure where the economy is going, and so they may be uncertain as to that certain business unit because it's highly cyclical from an economic standpoint. Whatever the reason may be, they may decide to put that portion of people in a flexible office space, maybe even in the same building that their traditional lease is in. And so when you start to look at the equation like that, and couple flexible office space along with your traditional space and allow yourself a valve to turn on and off as your headcount need changes, that's when we really see it becoming a piece of the overall portfolio strategy that is very strategic in nature.
So you made the point at the beginning that flexible office space still represents a small percentage, but I believe in some cities, correct me if I'm wrong, Julie, but I believe there are some cities where WeWork is the largest office tenant, if you want to call them a tenant, that they control more office space than any other single entity. Is that the case? And also, just what percentage of office space in major cities is actually taken by, whether it's WeWork or competitors in the flexible office space?
So flexible office space, again, although it's captivating the headlines, it is only just under 2% of inventory across the United States. So very small percentage. There are instances where certain flexible space operators do make up, you know, a large portion of that percentage, and in some cases even the large a large portion of the tenant base in that particular market. But generally, it is a very small percentage of space that right now is dedicated to flexible office in any given market. Now, there are some markets that are higher, you know, than that. So Manhattan, for instance, and San Francisco are two of the most highly penetrated markets. But generally around the U.S., we're sitting at under 2%. And if you compare that to some of the international markets like London and Shanghai that are upwards of 6 or 8%, it shows you that there is a growth model there that is left to get to those numbers, and those markets alone are still growing also. So certainly more growth in this space to be had.
What about in 5 or 10 years? Does the report project what percentage of office space, flex space, will be occupying in, say, 5 or 10 years based on current growth projections?
It does. So we have a low and a mid and a high range scenario in the report. The low range gets us to about 6% of total office dedicated to flexible office space by 2030. The mid range gets us into the mid-teens, so I think around 13%. And then the high range puts us in the 20% range. Now, this report was created and released before recent news in the headlines. So I think that none of us would say that we are likely to see the high growth scenario, but I think that we will very likely end up somewhere between the low growth and the mid growth scenario, maybe in the high single digits, low teens by 2030 without a problem.
How many players are in the space now? Well, everybody talks about WeWork, but they're not the only player there, correct? I mean, how many players are there in the space, and how many significant players?
So, believe it or not, there are over 700 individual operators out there in the United States right now that we track. Now, 80% of those are single location entities, which means that there is one location that they are operating, very much a mom and pop shop, and that's all that they have plans for. Now, the big guys, so the top five, make up just about 60% of the landscape. So it is clear that although there are 700 players, there are a handful of them that are really moving the needle in terms of what this space looks like and what it means.
So let's talk about, final question here, Julie. Let's talk about the future and what ways you expect flex space to evolve. You've already made the point that it's certainly going to grow just in terms of space, but how will it evolve in terms of capabilities or in terms of culture? I don't know if that's a fair question or not. I'm asking you to play a little bit of Nostradamus here, but what does it look to be down the road?
Great question, and it's what a lot of people want to know. What we believe is that there are certain pillars that are the most important pillars of flexible office space that will continue to be into the future because it is what the consumer base wants when they are demanding the space. Number one is flexibility, right? At the core of this is making sure that you can engage with shorter terms than you would on a typical market deal. Second is speed to market. Can I get into the market quickly and into the type of space that I can be productive in? And third is capital deferral. So do I not have to put up my own capital to actually get into this space, but is it sort of a turnkey solution that I can just walk into and enjoy? Those three things are going to absolutely stay the most important as time marches on. The things that will change are a couple things. Number one, you talked about the amenities and experiences. I think that amenities and experiences are great, and amenities and experiences are very important, and they're very important to attract and retain the right talent base. But as the economy rises and falls, we've all seen that these different types of amenities and experiences will also ebb and flow along with that as money is more readily available to be put into them. So I do not think that amenities and experiences necessarily will always stay the most important element of these spaces. The aesthetic will, because making sure that you still have a comfortable, well-functioning, productive environment to engage with is always going to be paramount regardless. The second thing that I think is going to change is how landlords are engaging with this space, and we're already seeing it happen. So in the beginning, because this was very much uncharted territory, there were a lot of traditional lease agreements being done between landlords and third-party flexible space operators, because that was the least risky way that landlords thought to engage with it. And it was the only way, frankly, that the flexible space operators could get their foot in the door, except for very few special situations. So that right now we see morphing into more partnership agreements because I think landlords are believing that this is a element that their consumer base wants or a portion of the consumer base wants. And if they are willing and think it's an important amenity almost to put into their building stack, then they want to be more a partner with their third-party providers or even go do it themselves in order to provide that flexible amenity. And what that allows them to do is it allows them to enjoy more of the upside potential. It gives them the ability to have more transparency into the flexible space operator and what's happening within that location. And it gives them more control over the space itself and what it looks like. So that is where we see this morphing into down the line. But with flexibility, speed to market, and capital deferral for the consumer being at the pillars of what makes this successful.
Our guest has been Julie Whalen. She is head of Occupier Research for the Americas at CBRE. She is also the lead author on the report about flex office space here in the United States. And Julie, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm assuming that the report can be downloaded from the CBRE website. Is that right, Julie?
Yes, it can be.
Okay, well, thank you again very much for taking the time.
Thanks, Mike. It's been a pleasure.